today.
Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. This is the program where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, with military and economic schemes. And the purpose of this show is to go beyond merely presenting the news. We're going to explain not only why these things are happening, but what they portend for our future and for our countries. Then, during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms through His Torah, which, my friends, means teaching, not law. If you are rational, this will be the most meaningful part of today's program. Our number, if you want to call to question, criticize, or affirm anything we have to say, is 877-300-7645. I want to begin with a story that caught my eye this morning for how odd it is and really what it actually tells us. It reads, U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, who I call Hillary Rotten Clinton, says that she takes responsibility for the security failure at the Benghazi consulate that led to the killing of four Americans in Libya last month. Now, wait a minute. Madam Secretary of State, didn't you and this president blame a movie trailer for that? Are now you saying that when you blamed the movie trailer for this and called it reprehensible, even though it presented Muhammad accurately, although was poorly produced, that was the movie trailer that incited these Muslims to do what they did, and now you're saying you're responsible? Now, how are you responsible, Madam Secretary of State? Or are you just saying that you're responsible because of the bloody mess that has occurred as a result of the President of the United States and you lying? Are you trying to take heat away from him so that he doesn't look so stupid in today's debate, this evening's debate on international policy? Methinks you are following on a sword that is being held by the President. This is really pathetic. You know, the issue here isn't the breach of security that caused the American ambassador to be murdered by the friends of Sharia law, Ansar Sharia. The issue here is that knowing that this was a murder, assassination, that had been planned by Ansar Sharia months in advance, and that was perpetrated using weapons that had been supplied via the United States to the Mujahideen that had overthrown the Gaddafi regime, that the President of the United States, knowing the truth, chose to lie. And then when he was confronted by the fact that he not only lied to the American people, but lied to the U.S. House of Representatives and to the U.S. Senate, has now tried to hide from this issue by having Hillary Rotten Clinton accept blame. Now, she is partly to blame. It is Hillary Rotten Clinton that embraced the Muslim Brotherhood, that embraced the upheaval of and the reformation of Islam in Tunisia, that sacrificed Tunisia to fundamentalist Islam. It is Secretary Hillary Rotten Clinton, along with President Barack Hussein Obama, that decided it would be a good thing to arm the very jihadists that we fought in Afghanistan and in Iraq, giving them weapons so that our enemies could overthrow Gaddafi. And they used those weapons against our ambassador. So in that regard, they are responsible. But in this mea culpa, she is not accepting responsibility for siding with the Muslim Brotherhood or fundamentalist Islam at the detriment of the United States. She's only saying that, oh, she's responsible for these people and should have provided better security. The issue wasn't security. The issue was American foreign policy that has led to this disaster. Even the article says that Mrs. Clinton said that ensuring the safety of U.S. diplomatic staff overseas was her job, not of the White House. I beg to differ. You are a secretary in this administration. The administration oversees the Department of State. You are a White House appointee, Mrs. Hillary Rotten Clinton. And therefore, you cannot absolve the White House for lying to the American people regarding this assassination by the Friends of Sharia, fundamentalist Islamic law. The article reads, it seems that Mrs. Clinton is trying to draw criticism away from Mr. Obama, who needs a strong debate performance if he is to recover his lead in the polls, says the BBC's Adam Brooks in Washington, getting to the heart of the matter. Larry, my friend in Florida, I understand that you would like to comment. I don't know if it's on this story or just something else that you heard in the news.
It really is. First of all, what does accept responsibility mean if nothing happens?
Well, of course, nothing, because the American people aren't willing to hold this president responsible for lying to them about something this essential to their security. He claims that he is first and foremost concerned about the security and safety of the American people, and yet an American was murdered, and he lied about the reasons for it, and is aiding and abetting the murderers, and yet when he was called on it, and when his vice president lied specifically in the debate, you know, and Biden, when he was in the debate, he said that they merely reported the information that the intelligence community had provided to them as they received that news, blaming, therefore, the intelligence community for providing bogus intelligence. When in fact,
well, Mr. Biden also said that Syria was five times larger than Libya, which is of course ridiculous. Yeah.
But the reality is that the day after that incident, I shared an article with our listeners on this program, which was one of many which revealed that within an hour of the time that the ambassador was killed. Murdered, that we knew it was perpetrated by Ansar Sharia, which is Friends of Sharia Law, fundamentalist Muslims, and we knew that they had been planning the attack for months, and we knew that they used weapons that had been supplied by America. We knew the truth, and yet this president purposefully lied. And then to cover up his lie, he told the American people via his vice president in a debate that they reported the news that the information they were given by the intelligence community as they had it made available to them, which is the antithesis of what's true. So you not only have a liar as commander-in-chief of the U.S. Armed Forces, but a man who will lie and impugn others to advance his own political agenda, which is his own personal reelection. And when Mitt Romney said, you know, there's 47% of Americans who pay no taxes, which is a statement of fact. That's something the media has yet to report, but it is a statement of fact. It's 47% of Americans pay no tax whatsoever. And that most of them feel entitled. Well, you talk to somebody that receives Social Security and benefits from Medicare or food stamps, and I'll guarantee you the vast majority of them feel entitled to those benefits. And he said that they will never vote for him. Well, you know, he's right. If you have been told that the president, you know now for certain, the president of the United States lied about a national security issue of grave consequence, and yet 47% of Americans still support this man who would purposefully deceive and throw state and intelligence under the bus to foster his own reelection. What's wrong with 47% of you?
Well, what's wrong is that they don't believe that what they do is theft when it really is theft. And, of course, that's not...
Yeah, they're stealing from their children and their grandchildren.
More observant. Well, they're stealing from all of us.
Right.
You know, one of the other things I want to throw in here, this is on Drudge this morning. The U.S., now get this, the U.S. is to help create an elite Libyan force.
Great.
To combat Islamic extremists And to that I say, say what?
Yeah.
Wasn't it the U.S. and the U.N. that put this group in power? When is enough enough?
Yeah, the reality is that, and I covered this way before this program on the Genesis Communication Network, Shattering Myths, on a program on the Blog Talk Radio called Yada Ya Radio. I covered probably 20 stories that documented the fact that most of the leaders of the Libyan rebels had actually fought alongside the Taliban and Al-Qaeda against America, both in Iraq and in Afghanistan, and that they were the very enemy who were hunting down and killing Americans there, who, when that jihad simmered down, Americans withdrew from Iraq and are now withdrawing from Afghanistan, a disproportionate number of the foreign fighters were Libyans, and they withdrew back to Libya to go fight this jihad against Gaddafi. And so the enemy we were fighting there all of a sudden became our ally, which we were now arming in Libya. In other words, it turned full circle. The very terrorists, the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, that Jimmy Carter and Zygmunt Brzezinski thought it would be a swell idea to provide $5 billion worth of weaponry so that they could wage war against the Soviet government in Afghanistan, that very group of Taliban and Al-Qaeda that we armed there, that we then went to fight in Afghanistan, are now our allies once again, and we armed them in Libya. You know,
I ask what you think of training commando units over there for the Libyan government? And isn't the Libyan government now the Sharia compliant Libyan government?
Of course. In fact, this next article that we're going to go to here is the New York Times yesterday coming out and saying that the vast preponderance of the weapons that Saudi Arabia and Qatar are supplying to the Syrians, which are coming by way of America, by the way. We're the manufacturer of those weapons. We sent them to Qatar and Saudi Arabia, and the Saudi Arabians and the Qataris are sending them into Syria. The New York Times is reporting that the vast preponderance of those weapons are now being wielded by hardline Islamic jihadists, which is the same thing that you are warning America against doing in Libya. This is the end of our first segment of Shattering Myths. Please join us again. Our number is 877-300-7645. The second segment of the Shattering Myths program this morning. We're joined by Larry from Florida. Larry mentioned something in the first segment that played beautifully into our next article, which is that the Americans are now trying to arm and equip a group of Libyans who are jihadists. They're mujahideen. And so we will be providing the weapons and training to the very enemy that we fought in Afghanistan and in Iraq. And speaking of that, you know, we're not Monday morning quarterbacking here. What we're here to tell you is that 10 years ago, 11 years ago, before America invaded Iraq and Afghanistan, as part of this program, I repeatedly told all who would listen that this is exactly what would happen, that we would end up aiding and abetting the very people who sought to do us harm. And that is precisely what has happened. And before the Syrian civil war became national news, we also explained that there was no side to back here. You know, the presidential candidate, Mitt Romney, said in a speech at VMI a week ago that he would identify those who share our values and supply them with the weaponry needed to bring down helicopters, tanks, and artillery. Now, the fact of the matter is there's only one group of people in Syria who share our values, and they're actually not engaged in the fight. And that is because they aren't with the rebels. In fact, they're hoping that the rebels do not prevail. The only group of people, about 10% of Syrians, who share our values, speaking of Western values, are the Roman Catholics who live in Syria. And they are uniformly, as is the Roman Catholic Church, on the side of the current dictator, Assad. And you say, how can that be? Well, the reason is they recognize what America doesn't. And that is that the rebels here are Mujahideen. They are jihadists, just as they were in Libya. And that if they gain control of the country, then the Christians are as good as dead. And they know it. And so they don't want the rebels armed in Syria because it will make a bad situation much worse. The Christians will be slaughtered if, in fact, we continue to provide arms to the rebels. So this is what the article says. It's from the New York Times. It was yesterday's article. It says, most of the arms shipped at the behest of Saudi Arabia and Qatar, both of which are shipping American arms, they're not manufacturers of arms, they're distributors of American arms, to supply the Syrian rebel groups fighting the government of Bashar al-Assad, are going to hardline Islamic jihadists, and not to the more secular opposition groups that the West wants to bolster, according to American officials and Middle Eastern diplomats. The fact of the matter is that in each of these revolutions, there was a smattering of secular opposition groups. But once each of these revolutions and each of these countries took flight, the secular opposition groups became meaningless. They were steamrolled by fundamentalist Islamic groups. You see, in the Islamic world, a secularist, a peaceful person, a Democrat, has no merit whatsoever. They have no standing in the society whatsoever. And as a matter of fact, if they are outspoken about being a secularist, they too are as good as dead. And so there are no leading secular opposition spokespeople or groups. The conclusion of which President Obama and other senior officials are aware, from classified assessments of the Syrian conflict that has now claimed more than 25,000 lives, cast doubt as to whether the White House's strategy of minimal and indirect intervention in the Syrian conflict is accomplishing its intended purpose of helping a democratic-minded opposition topple an oppressive government, or is instead sowing the seeds of future insurgencies hostile to the United States. It's amazing, first of all, that the New York Times would actually cover this, because it makes the President of the United States look like he is supporting fundamentalist Islamic jihad. But it is also amazing that they would even ask that, pose this in this way, cast into doubt. How could this cast anything into doubt? Long before this occurred, we told everyone who would listen that if we supply arms to Syria, it will prove that we did not learn the lesson of Iraq, of Afghanistan, of Libya, of Egypt, that all we're going to do is make a bad situation worse. The rebels who are in opposition to the Shiite government are Sunnis, and they are fundamentalists. If they gain control, Syria will be vastly more antagonistic towards the United States and Israel than they currently are. And the only reason that Syria is now embroiled in this war is because it's a proxy war. The United States... Good morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths. Larry, you heard the introduction to that story. You've got the President of the United States who made the decision to send his CIA to Turkey and to authorize the distribution of American arms through Saudi Arabia and Qatar. And now you've got... Mitt Romney in his international speech saying that what we need to do in Syria is provide more weapons, more powerful weapons. What say you?
To people that share our values? Well, yeah. I don't know. I've never really thought about honor killing as one of my values. And see, that's the problem we really have here, isn't it? They don't share our values.
No.
And they are our enemy. And to sit there and arm additional people or train additional commandos in Libya is, it puts me to mind of the drug cartel Zeta that was accidentally trained up at the University of Americas there, you know, where we train the Rangers. And now they're the most powerful drug cartel in Mexico.
Well, you know my experience where, Larry, I met with the Oscar Martyrs Brigade Battalion of Fatah, which is the group that the United States has.
By the way, that was very gutsy.
And
at the tip of the bottom of the line there.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I met with them, met with a senior officer and two lower ranking officers, and both of them were especially gleeful, and they asked me, you know, if I had heard the news, and they were so excited about what the news said. They said, well, the news last night was about the murder of 12 Israeli women and children, and they said, well, that was us. We did that. And they were so proud of what they had done.
And you were sitting in a room with them.
And yeah.
You can't get people here to believe that. They really, there's a disconnect there. They don't want to, I call it the Disneyland syndrome.
Yeah.
You know, where you'd like to believe in Disney World and Disneyland.
Yeah.
It's just lovely, but it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And so when you're talking about arming people like this, you got to understand, you know, there's a nice little term in the community called blowback, as you know.
Yeah.
But what that really amounts to is people going out and murdering others with weapons that you or intel that you've equipped your enemy with. That's called blowback.
Yeah. Well, that's what happened here. That's exactly what happened with these terrorists. They were in snappy uniforms that had been purchased by the United States. They were carrying M16s, which had been supplied by the United States. And after explaining how they had blown the axles off the civilian bus and then killed the women and children at point blank range with their rifles as they walked off the bus, they proudly told me that they had been trained in the United States in a Virginia base. And how
imagine that
the United States
imagine that.
Train the murderers and equip them.
Do you think the average American gets up and they go to work every day and have their labor stolen in the form of taxation so that they can arm and equip people who go out and blow the axles off buses and murder, you know, a dozen people a night? Do you think that? I really don't think the average person goes to work with that in mind.
Are supporting a State Department that decides that they're going to side with the Muslim Brotherhood and with fundamentalist Muslims around the world to the detriment of our own citizens, or a government that invades Iraq and gives Iraq to Iran so that Iran can complete its nuclear ambitions, which they will deploy in the United States, or invades.
Do you really think? Do you really think that? And I'm seriously asking you this question. Do you really believe that it was an accident that they got rid of Mubarak over in Egypt and installed this this new outfit that's clearly, we've got nothing but animosity to for Israel
United
States.
It's the same thing as the invasion of Iraq. You'd have to be stupid beyond belief to not realize that 65% of Iraqis were Shia Muslims and that the clerics that were over those Shia Muslims were all from Tehran and they shared the same values with the mullahs in Tehran. And so if you deposed the Sunni secular government of Iraq, and you allowed one person, one vote, that they would vote to ally themselves with the mullahs in Iran. It is exactly what happened, and it was the only thing that could have happened. And it's the same thing is true in Egypt. By Mubarak, who was a scumbag, but by allowing the Muslim Brotherhood to come to power in Egypt, we were simply aiding and abetting our own future destruction and the worldwide uproar against Israel, because things will go from bad to worse in Egypt. They already have, and they will blame everything that is wrong with their country on the United States and Israel, and they will do everything in their power to kill Americans and Jews.
And well, surprise, I agree.
We facilitated
100%
that
with what you're saying. So I guess, you know, I'm sitting here scratching my head, asking myself who it is that's really in charge of this country. Because,
yeah,
you know, clearly what's going on is not in the best interest of America.
It's suicidal. What we did in Afghanistan was suicidal. We pushed the most fundamentalist Muslims in Afghanistan, out of Afghanistan, into Pakistan, which is a country with nuclear weapons. There is nothing more suicidal that we could have done as a nation. And then after squandering 2,000 lives there, all we're going to do is give the country back to a better armed, a better equipped, a more vital Taliban. Each of our indulgences overseas where we intervene in other countries has been counterproductive. So you have to wonder, is it just dumb luck that everything we do turns out wrong, or are these people actually aware of what they are doing and are purposefully sacrificing the lives of Americans and the future of America for their own political ambition? And when you
ambitions. And I honestly think it's the latter of the two. I really believe that.
Well, with George W. Bush and with his dad, it was cash ambitions. With both of them, they were heavily invested with the Sauds and with the U.S. military and oil companies. And as a result of that, they became fabulously enriched at a war that cost America $4 trillion and some 10,000 lives and led to the deaths of almost a million people in Afghanistan and in Iraq. And so, yes, in their case, absolute personal greed was the motivation. But, you know, there is something in this world that is vastly more alluring than money. And that is the realization that we have so destroyed the value of our currency with the Fed and with fiat money that money is no longer what it once was in terms of having value. What has value to those who covet is power, is control. And so they do most of what they do for the purpose of control, of influencing, of having power. And you know, when you are president and you are a wartime president, you have far more power than you do than at any other time. And it's why they continue to wage war. It's why this president didn't learn the lessons of Afghanistan and Iraq and aided and abetted the revolution in Egypt and Libya, which came back to bite us, and hasn't even learned those lessons and is now engaged in Syria, arming and abetting America's foes.
Yeah, well, one of the other things I want to point out, if we were actually wanting to run around the globe and be the good guys and do what was right, you know, everybody's aware of the Janjaweed running through
Sudan.
Help me out.
Darfur region, but that's Sudan.
Yeah, in the Sudan. And first they killed all the Christians, and now they're killing everybody whose second language happens to be Arabic, you know, if it isn't your primary.
They're killing African Muslims. When they were killing animists and Christians, those animists and Christians were Africans, and you had Arab Muslims killing African Christians and animists, and no one seemed to care, and they murdered 2.5 million of them over the course of 25 years, with the West supplying the weapons and buying the oil that fueled their ability to commit genocide, and no one cared. Then when the Arab Muslims in the capital of the Sudan started to murder African Muslims, then you got Hollywood involved, and they said the Darfur became their big crusade. But the fact of the matter is that what you have is a fundamentalist Islamic government that is aided and supported by the West, having murdered now 3 million people. And if the United States actually wanted to be the international do-gooders, somewhere along the road, after they had killed a few hundred thousand, we could have intervened there because there was no chance we could have made that situation worse. And yet we did nothing. So it speaks to the reality that you were hinting at, that America doesn't invade these countries because we're trying to protect and spare lives. When America first aided al-Qaeda and the Taliban in Afghanistan during the Jimmy Carter administration, that civil war killed between 2 and 3 million Afghanis. We didn't spare lives. We killed people. The same thing is true with our invasion of Iraq. We didn't spare lives. During Saddam Hussein, far less than a few hundred people died each year in political and religious violence. And now over 1 million have been killed since our invasion. We didn't spare lives. We led to the annihilation of lives. And now look at what our weapons are doing in Syria.
Absolutely. So why are we continuing to get involved in these things? And we all know the outcomes. I mean, the writing is on the wall. It's clear before they walk in the door what's going to happen.
When you arm and abet bad people and give them weapons, they kill people. And so by the very fact that American weapons are going to the jihadists in Syria, more people are going to die. Now, does that mean that that Assad's a good guy? Of course not. Would I like to see Assad gone? Yeah, maybe. And it's why would you say maybe? And I say maybe because gone and replaced by what? You know, if he's gone and replaced by Hezbollah, Nasrallah, then that's a bad trade. If he's gone and replaced by a Saudi-backed or Qatari Wahhabist, then that's a bad trade. It's just like in Iraq. Saddam Hussein was a bad guy, but what we've got now in Iraq is vastly worse. So you have to always look at the consequence. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. For those who would like to engage in this discussion, our number is 877-376-45. Continue with the story from the New York Times regarding the disaster that is Syria. This is a quote. The opposition groups that are receiving most of the lethal aid, imagine that, combine two words, lethal aid. We consider military aid to be aid. So it's lethal aid are exactly the ones we don't want to have it, said one American official familiar with the outlines of the findings, commenting on an operation that in American eyes has gone increasingly awry. Boy, is that a statement of understatement. In a speech at the Military Institute, the Virginia Military Institute last Monday, Mr. Romney said that he would ensure that rebel groups who, quote, share our values would, quote, obtain the arms they need to defeat Assad's tanks, helicopters, and fighter jets. That suggests that he would approve the transfer of weapons like anti-aircraft and anti-tank systems, which are much more potent than anything the United States has been willing to put into rebel hands thus far, precisely because American officials cannot be certain who will ultimately be using them. Oh, yeah, we can be certain. We can be absolutely certain who will be wielding the weapons that America supplies. Fundamentalist, Islamist, Wahhabist, Salafist, the very Mujahideen.
Doesn't that go back to what you've been telling people, which is you really have to look at Islam.
Correct.
You know, Islam makes these people that way. You can't go out and say you're doing God's bidding while you're decapitating people.
Well, of course, Muslims can because they are doing their God's bidding. It is what their God ordered them to do. You know, the terrorists have not corrupted their religion. The religion has corrupted them. Muhammad was a merciless assassin. He was a mass murderer. He was a ruthless terrorist. And the Quran orders Muslims to follow his example. The Quran tells Muslims that those Muslims who are not jihadists, who are not fighting and killing all non-Muslims, that they are hypocrites. And that Allah
think it's a bad idea for us to arm the people that have been trained that way. Is that right?
Of course. If you've been indoctrinated in Islam and you are a good Muslim, you are a terrorist, you can't fight a war against terror if you're going to successfully, if you're going to supply the weapons that the terrorists are wielding. And that's what we've done. We're supplying the weapons that the terrorists are wielding in Syria and Yemen and Egypt and Libya and Tunisia and Afghanistan and Iraq. We are supplying the very weapons that the terrorists are wielding. Reminds me a lot of Vietnam. In Vietnam, the weapons that were wielded against Americans were made by American firms in Russia. We supplied the weapons that killed 65,000 Americans. In World War II, we did the same thing. George Prescott Bush was involved in propping up Union Bank, which worked expressly to arm and fund the Nazi war machine. They collectively owned the process of transferring coal into fuel. And which is why the concentration camp was built at Auschwitz for that express purpose. And they funded the Nazi steel boom. And between the two, George Prescott Bush and his Nazi allies, that's the grandfather of the last president of the United States, the previous president, they made it possible for the Nazi war machine to kill Americans. We do this.
I did not know that.
Oh, it's George Herbert Walker, which is what the president is named after. You know, there's George Herbert Walker and George Herbert Walker Bush. That George Herbert Walker and Prescott Bush collectively formed Union Bank, and they are the bankers that actually funded Hitler's rise to power. They funded his brown shirts, his private military. They funded the Nazi headquarters. They made it possible not only for Adolf Hitler to rise to power, but also supply the Nazi war machines with its steel and with its fuel. And as a result of that, we, America, helped aid and abet the war machine that killed Americans, just as we did in the Pacific theater of World War II, supplying the steel and the fuel to the Japanese, just as we did in Vietnam, just as we have done in Afghanistan and Iraq. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you...